Thanks, Seth and Donna. How you doing? How you doing, everyone? So today we're going to be talking about how to start contributing to open source. So a quick who am I? My name is Tierney Siren. My pronouns are he and they. I am a senior cloud developer advocate at Microsoft. I'm a collaborator on Node.js, which is a JavaScript runtime. I'm a collaborator on Electron, which is a desktop application framework. You might know it from like Teams or Slack or VS Code. I'm a delegate to TC39, which is the standards body, the committee that defines ECMAScript, which is effectively known as JavaScript. I'm a voting member on the OpenJS Foundation Cross-Project Council, and you can generally find me as at BinBang in most places. So let's get into the basics. Git. Git is a version control system that most open source projects use at this point. It is originally started under Linux and then kind of evolved and grew a lot in popularity. Some parallels can be found in Subversion or Mercurial or other kind of similar systems. GitHub is a platform that you can kind of use with Git, or Git is based around Git. It's largely used by open source projects to track their issues, collaborate on features, and kind of have a little bit more visibility or discoverability, you know, as an open source project in a kind of commons or common space. So with Git and GitHub, there's a few primordials. These are kind of the fundamental building blocks of open source in the context of Git and GitHub. One is commits. So these are kind of units of work in the structure of Git. So like if I wrote a JavaScript file, I would commit it, or I would kind of set up a commit that had that file and the changes in it. Or I could change 10 files and have those changes in that commit. So it's kind of a way to modularize your work and kind of push it up incrementally rather than all at once. Issues are a feature of GitHub that can effectively serve as a backlog or as you know, a tracker for kind of anything, whether it's community discussion or feature requests or bug reports, things like that. Pull requests are a similar structure, specifically in GitHub, that are the way you can submit commits to be included in a repository. So the repository is kind of like the project, and you can submit your commits through a pull request to be included in that project. This is a space that allows maintainers to kind of review it and give feedback make sure all the, you know, tests and stuff are working. There's variations of this in other platforms, but the ideas are generally the same. So let's get into the A side, specifically contributing to a project. So in an existing project, you're going to want to look for a few different things. One of them is a code of conduct. Specifically, having a code of conduct present is an indicator of community safety, which is, you know, a good thing. You generally want to be participating in a safe community. It's not a guarantee of a safe community, but it is a good indicator that there's some thought and effort being put into community safety. You know, if you go into a project, you're trying to contribute, you're trying to start contributing, read this document and understand it. It'll outline what kind of behavior is and isn't acceptable in the project, and kind of how you can, the standards of conduct, the standards of open source conduct in that project. So the next thing you want to look at is a license. Licenses are pretty important. If a project is effectively licensed in a way that makes it so you can't use it because of some kind of restrictions that you have personally, or in a way that you wouldn't want to use it because it requires something that would be against how you want to use open source, or if it is set up in a way that your employer actually wouldn't allow you to use it. A lot of companies have allow lists and block lists of licenses, and then you can get exceptions and stuff. But basically, having kind of a license allows you to kind of get context on that about usage. And if it's if it allows usage in a way that's not positive to how you want to use it or how you can use it, you may want to skip out on contributing to that project and potentially find another. However, most projects are actually pretty permissibly licensed. So, you know, that's generally under something like MIT or Apache 2.0, other similar licenses. Disclaimer there, I'm not a lawyer. Take a look at the licenses yourself and ask your lawyers if you need to. But those kinds of licenses are generally seen as more permissive and more usable and contributable, largely because of how aggressively permissive they are. So, you know, when you're looking at a license, make sure you're actually taking into consideration, can you use it? Can you contribute to it? I had a case where I started an open source project in the package manifest. So in the package JSON for JavaScript, I defined it as MIT. Like there's a property you can have that's MIT, but I didn't actually include the license. And at one point I had a friend from Google reach out to me and say that they couldn't actually contribute because the code wasn't actually licensed. Like there wasn't the artifact of the license. So, you know, this kind of thing is like something that people do and is a relative norm, especially for people who are working from their companies and able to contribute to open source that way. The next thing you want to look for in terms of like basics is a contributing.md. So maintainers write this document or write a document called contributing.md. It's often a collection of all of the useful information about how to contribute. So it'll often kind of document you know, the expectations of the contributors and maintainers and like how people should be contributing here, not in the sense of conduct, but in the sense of like code. So it'll document things like tooling and testing and the kind of basics of that plus code style. So like, do you use this linter or that linter, that kind of thing. And then it'll also kind of detail how you can contribute, like what kind of things are and aren't wanted, that kind of stuff. So this document is another one that you should go and read and understand. Generally, pretty well documented in here. A lot of projects keep this up to date, and it's a good kind of resource to get started contributing to a project once you've selected one and once you've found one that's relevant to your ecosystem. So again, once you've found one, found a project that's relevant to your ecosystem, you know, I come from JavaScript, so I generally look on GitHub for JavaScript projects or something I would want to use, something like that. But once you've found that, you'd want to look for, you know, there's a bunch of different ways you can start looking. One of the good ways is looking for labels, repos, so projects with the label good first issue. So that is a starter label. There's a handful of others, first timers welcome, and there's, you know, a few others. Your ecosystem might have adopted a different one. At this point, GitHub has relatively adopted good first issue as a kind of platform specific one. But that kind of issue is going to be, or that kind of label is going to be applied to issues that are good for first timers. So if you're looking to start getting, you know, start contributing, that's a good issue to, or label to look at. If issues don't exist that are labeled with that, which is common in bigger projects like Node or Kubernetes, where a lot of the issues have been solved, or at least a lot of the starter basic issues have been solved, and the issues are like largely complex, like super deep technical issues. There's kind of other things you can go and look at into contributing. So like, for example, you could like add tests. A lot of projects publish their test coverage. So finding areas where there's lacking coverage and going and writing some tests in whatever testing framework they've chosen, that's a good way to contribute. Translating documentation. So if you know more than one language or generally more than English is what ends up happening. But if you know other languages that the documentation isn't native to, helping translating from the original language to a second language is really, really helpful because it helps get folks from that that language or who would use that language primarily into the project and using it effectively. So that's another way that you can really effectively contribute a lot. Triaging open issues is another good one. So a lot of repos have, well, bigger repos, like larger projects have hundreds if not thousands of open issues, and going through and helping triage those and either getting more information out of people or like out of the people who originally opened it or additional people who followed up, or going ahead and just kind of saying, you know, this is the issue, I've done some work and I found it that it's probably related to this thing, and kind of pointing people in the right direction is also something that would be really helpful to maintainers and kind of help you if you do that a few times and kind of build that muscle memory. That's another way to get started. And then you can eventually get to a place where you can submit a pull request, or you can just start off with that. But like kind of triaging open issues, submitting pull requests, that kind of thing is really helpful. Another one is like if that contributing.md file isn't actually fully documented or like up to date compared to your experience with what the maintainers expect, actually updating that and maintaining that is another good way, because it's sometimes hard to balance. Here's how we want people to engage, and we need to, this is the work we really need to do to get this thing moving. So kind of helping out with that meta process is also very helpful. And then generally, if like none of those work or none of those are interesting, or if none of those are like available or applicable, going down the path of asking the maintainer. So like if I'm the maintainer of XYZ project, you come and want to contribute, you know, we have 100% test coverage, our docs are fully translated, or you don't know a second language, or you don't know a second language outside of the base language. And like the contributing docs are great, there's no issues labeled good first issue. Asking me, I probably have something on my mind that like, oh yeah, this would be really helpful to get someone's basic input on, or like not even basic, but like someone new, some fresh eyes on, is often a thing that I hold in the projects I work on. And I know a lot of maintainers are generally pretty open to having additional people come on. So that's another way you can approach it. Not all maintainers are, and that's okay, but a lot of them are in fact open to that. So when you go down that path and you start creating issues or PRs, one of the things to pay attention to here is issue and PR templates. So specifically when you create an issue or when you create a PR, there is a meta, there can be, not always, there can be a meta file in the repo called like, you know, it's in the .github slash, I forget the full path, but it's effectively like issue template and PR template or pull request template. And those files kind of can allow maintainers to set up specific structure in issues and in pull requests for folks to follow. So if you, you know, go to create a new issue and it can pop up like, is this a feature request? Is this a bug report? Is this a question? Is this something else? Or is it none of the above? The maintainers can kind of set up templates for that. So if you're, you know, going and submitting a bug report through an issue, it's really important to go and fill all of that information out. Or if you're submitting a pull request and it has, you know, does it pass all the tests? Like, does it have a bunch of checkboxes and that are like, you know, you ran this, you did this, you did this. And like, what's the purpose of this PR? What does this add? What does this remove? That kind of, those kind of questions. Make sure you fill that stuff out, because that's really important in reducing the burden on maintainers. And often if folks don't follow those templates, it generally ends up getting closed, just because it's like, I as a maintainer, or maintainer in person as a maintainer, cannot actively kind of keep investing time in something that like I can't get this basic info out of. So like I need this info to progress, and if I can't get it after like one or two attempts, I need to move on. So that like that's the kind of maintainer's perspective that I hear a lot. So that's kind of one thing to be aware of, is just make sure you're really aggressively kind of filling out that and giving as much information as you can where it's relevant. Another thing is often bugs and features and that kind of stuff aren't unique. So like you may be coming into this project, you know, 3 years after it was created. 2 years ago, someone wanted the same feature that you want now. Or 6 months ago, or even a week ago, someone encountered the same bug that you just encountered. So in that case, or in any case, like whenever you want to go create a feature request or create a pull request, go and search in the repo. So GitHub does have search functionality that allows you to scope it down to a specific repo. And that will allow you to kind of see if there's existing work already. If there is, great, you can add your plus one, or you can add kind of commentary or just even thumbs up it to kind of indicate your support or your ability, your interest in it. And you know, if it's an issue and you can figure out a solution, go ahead and submit a pull request for that. As long as the maintainer hasn't said like, we're not going to do this, or we're never going to fix this, this is intended, or something like that. So yeah, be sure you search before you create an issue or submit a PR, to make sure you're not kind of duplicating additional or making additional work that they've already done, or that a maintainer's already done. So in that context, let's move kind of to the B side, which is maintaining a project. So this is going to be a bit familiar. It's largely the same context. However, it is different. And we'll get into that. So again, Very important thing, have a code of conduct. It's fundamental to any project. If you're going and creating your own project, or you're coming into one that doesn't have a code of conduct, having something like the Contributor Covenant, which is a widely adopted code of conduct, that's a great template. So that's kind of a basic template that you can kind of expand off of. If you need to, you can modify it and edit it to suit your needs. That is one example of a template. There's a lot of other templated code of conducts. Feel free to use those. It's worth noting, though, that in a code of conduct, the key thing isn't having the code of conduct, it's enforcing it, so actually acting on it. If you have a code of conduct but don't act on it, it's kind of useless. If you are in a position where you're maintaining a project, either your own, your new thing, or an old thing, definitely go ahead and make sure you're actually going ahead and maintaining that effectively. The next thing you want to do is make sure you're licensing your code. Again, most folks can't use code if there's no license, and a lot of folks won't be able to contribute if there's no license. Again, common licenses are MIT and Apache 2.0. Again, I'm not your lawyer. Definitely get advice from legal folks if you feel the need to. MIT, Apache, and ISC are relatively common. There are quite a few licenses that allow various things. So if you want to be able to also sell a commercial license or something like that, there's licenses that allow that. Commercial support or something like that. Like, there's a bunch of different kinds of licenses. Go and investigate the ones that fit your needs. The next thing is documenting your expectations in contributing.md. So things to include here, setup instructions, testing instructions, test authoring instructions. So like running tests versus authoring tests, debugging instructions, and issue MPR instructions. Those are all things that are really important that'll help lower the barrier for folks, other folks who are looking to contribute to actually engage. And specifically, this isn't just useful in the context of helping others, but it's also helpful for you in that, at least I found this, when I set up pretty strict contributing guidelines, it's something that is really useful for me in kind of following what I'm doing, or like following what I say once I write it down and like sticking to that really consistently. It's a very important thing, and it's something that I found really helpful for myself and for others who I'm working with. So that's a good one. Next thing is use labels. So labels are a feature of issues and pull requests in GitHub in general that's pretty important, or pretty effective, I should say. So using labels effectively can get you a lot of things. So to do that, you kind of want to have relevant labels. So for example, in Node, we have a bunch of labels that are specific to Windows, and we have a bunch of labels that are specific to Linux, and we have a bunch of labels that are specific to Mac OS. And those are like different kind of niche things on those platforms. We also have labels for like crypto, because that's a thing that we have to deal with. Very few people can do crypto work. And in fact, like largely it's a couple people that do that work. But when someone who can do that work comes along, it's really good to have a large set of issues, or at least appropriately tagged set of issues, that they can kind of come and help with and improve and find very rapidly. So like if I'm a crypto expert, I come in, and by that I mean cryptography, not cryptocurrency. If I'm a crypto expert, I come in and I want to contribute, or I want to improve Node's crypto, I can go find that that label and I'm good to go. And so like it helps kind of get experts in. It also, however, helps get new contributors in. So again, the good first issue label or similar issue or similar labels being applied to issues that are good for someone who's just starting is a really good way to kind of help grow a open source community from scratch if you're just starting and kind of contributing yourself. That's kind of the two human use cases. There's an additional use case of like labels are really good for changelog building and kind of context when people are going back through and trying to figure out what happened, where and when. Again, create issue MPR templates. So specifically, I've noted before that these are useful for maintainers, but specifically they allow you to implement basic automation of workflows within GitHub. So they actually do add additional UI when someone's creating an issue. They do lower the barrier to you as a maintainer or as a collaborator getting the required context. And they generally allow you to respond appropriately if context isn't, like, required context isn't available. So if someone's like, hey, I have this bug and your application or your tool works cross-platform, it's like, I need to know what platform this bug is happening on. I can't tell, but this is like, it's not happening here. There's two other systems. I can't test these right now, or something like that. And they're not able to respond. You ask again, they're not able to respond. At that point, it's like, cool, this is a bug. I'm going to close this until I hear what platform you're using, because I can't really reproduce this. And like, what version of that platform and things like that. So they're useful in kind of lowering the barrier to you getting the information you need by not having to ask for it every time. And if it's not present, that's an indicator that you don't really, that you can kind of be a little bit more lenient in like closing, which is good. It's also just, so issue templates and PR templates are also just generally good DX, developer experience for users. When someone's trying to ask a question, they might think it's a bug, but like if they're presented with question, bug, or feature request, they might click question. Or, you know, there's, you know, a variety of different things you can do here, but it's generally a better developer experience because it allows you to get to the root of this pretty quick and pretty easily. So yeah, these templates that kind of set folks up for success rather than failure and lead to a general all around better experience. So in our last couple of minutes here, we're going to go over the human side. And I'm probably going to go over this a little bit fast, just because this is kind of the chunky side of open source and the side we don't talk about enough. So pumping out code is something that's relatively straightforward and relatively common skill at this point. It's something that, you know, we're able to kind of get folks to a place where they can write code that does a thing. In open source, there's an additional factor of like people who aren't in like a corporation with you or aren't in a work situation with you. And so you kind of have to deal with people, working with contributors, politicking around PRs, discussing positive and negatives of shipping something or not shipping something, discussing small core if you want to include everything. There's a lot of different discussions that can happen, a lot of different viewpoints. And all of this involves humans. And I found that those challenges aren't actually substantially different from working in like a company or working in the space. So I actually found that it was relatively good for me starting in open source when I did to get to the point where I am like relatively comfortable in this space. It made me a lot more comfortable in a corporate space. So if you're kind of transitioning into tech but haven't gotten a job yet, it's a kind of good way to kind of begin to understand the politics that'll happen and kind of get used to that a bit. My notes are gone. Folks will participate in bad faith. So no matter what happens, there will be folks who come into a project that are not operating in good faith and just want to be trolly or negative and harmful. They will often skirt the lines of like what is acceptable behavior. So this has happened in projects I participated in where they follow the code of conduct, but they're obviously being detractors and not trying to be like beneficial and kind of work together and collaborate. My experience in that is ejecting those folks who are actively participating in bad faith is something that you're going to want to do as a act of help for your community and is in your project. Folks will expect a lot from you for nothing. So you're a maintainer of an open source project. You're going to have people who want things from you for free. It's okay to say no to them. This is one of the most common things that happens in open source. And if desires from others doesn't align with what you want out of a project, it's okay to say no. Folks will be hypercritical. They'll be very rude about your project and your work. It's common and expected. It's not you. It's not how you're performing or what you're doing or the work you're doing. I struggle with this a lot myself. Like it's hard to not absorb it and kind of hold that. But just know it's not you. Technical feedback is definitely not personal criticism. And often personal criticism is unfounded and really people trying to stretch. Finally, folks will say open source should be apolitical. folks often try to say that like diversity, equity, inclusion, and kind of efforts around that, like a COC or saying publicly that Black Lives Matter or similar issues are political and shouldn't be said in an open source project. That happens, and open source is inherently political. You got to get past it and go. And kind of those things aren't actually political, right? Like those are the things that open source kind of stands for, at least in modern open source does. And my experience generally is that whenever this comes up, there's systems available to you to kind of get past it, but there's tools available to you. And if that's a problem that you're encountering, reach out. There's people that'll help. I'll help if you want. Yeah. Thanks, y'all.